We're discussing pet care with a Wisconsin veterinarian on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We heard the reports of the pandemic puppy spike in adoptions. According to Pet Health, a firm that runs shelter management software, aggregating data from more than 1,100 shelters, its latest year-over-year numbers for the month of November shows more than 56,000 dogs left animal welfare organizations, along with 64,000 cats. Cat adoptions were flat compared to the previous November. Dog adoptions increased slightly. The data also points to a spike in euthanizing dogs, up 29%. Are you a pet owner? What pet-related challenges have you encountered? Did you adopt a pet during these times? Why? 800-642-1234. Dr. Danielle Mizek is with Janesville Animal Medical Center in Milton. Dr. Mizek, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you guys for having me.
Good morning. So, you know, veterinarians have been struggling, especially in rural areas, with staffing shortages of vets, of vet techs. We've heard about burnout and the boom in pet care leading to more hours. How has the pandemic changed how you think about how you approach your profession?
That's a wonderful topic. I think I'm really glad that you guys asked me to come on today. One of the things that I think is interesting to note is I'm a relatively newer graduate. I graduated in 2019 from North Carolina State's vet school, moved up to rural Wisconsin, and I've actually started and seen from the beginning of the pandemic all the way through now. Mm. And one of the biggest things that I think I need people, you know, to see and hear is that it has completely changed how we get patients in, how we see them, the flow and the workflow of getting patients in. But it hasn't really changed how we care for pets. Veterinarians and vet techs are some of the most dedicated people to ensuring animal and human health. And that has not changed. It's just the sheer amount of work that we have to do to take care of everybody who adopted a pet who now has, you know, chronically sick animals that they need to take care of. That is what's changed. And one of our vet techs and our veterinarians in our practice and across the state of Wisconsin are absolutely dedicated to what they do.
I noticed that your clinic in particular is no longer taking small animal emergencies after hours. What does that do to?
Yeah, so initially down here in Milton and Janesville, we actually are kind of segregated from the Upper Madison Veterinary Emergency Centers. And so originally our clinic had seen small animal emergencies just to help pet owners because there was, besides driving an hour south or north, there wasn't many places for our clients to go. About halfway through the pandemic, we lost, you know, a doctor to injuries. We had lost a couple of staff to other jobs. And we ended up needing, just to be able to maintain our sanity, to drop back down. Because there's weekends where myself or the other veterinarians have been on, and we'd see anywhere from, you know, 6 to 10 patients a weekend. And that's just me. No vet techs, nothing. Mm. Me kind of, you know, pushing through and just making sure I can see everybody I can. Because in addition to our small animal side, we also do large animal emergency calls. And a lot of those are actually on farms. So I'm driving, you know, anywhere from all the way at Broadhead, Wisconsin, all the way down to Caledonia, Illinois, all the way up to Cottage Grove. And that's a pretty large radius to be able to cover.
Do you feel the stress? Have you seen vets experiencing burnout?
Absolutely. I mean, just if you go kind of what veterinarians, you know, we're type A perfectionists. We tried our best to make sure everybody else is taken care of. And one of the, you know, the best parts about us is that we care a lot about what we do and about the people and animals we take care of. That comes at a cost when you're a veterinarian, because you can't absolutely help every single person every single time at every minute of the day. And so you kind of internalize that a lot. It tends to build up in your, you know, in your heart and your mind. And you're like, well, maybe I could do more and maybe I could do this. Or if I just give up, you know, 10 minutes with my family, I could have helped this pet instead. Hmm. And over time, you know, in 2 years' time, just in the pandemic itself, that really adds up on how much you can give, because there is literally pouring from an empty cup. You've got all I've got left to give you is that cup, you know, and then you've got nothing else to give the next patient that comes in, or, you know, the new puppy or the older dog. You know, there's a it's very, very true in our profession that we care a lot, and it comes back to bite us a lot of the times.
Dr. Mizek, let's talk about your patients for a moment, because we know that routine care is really important for pets. But if you're booking months in advance, how do you balance that out? What do you want your clients to understand as they book for their pet and try to keep up with this routine care?
Absolutely. So with routine care, what we mean by that is like you're going to your doctor for your annual wellness exam, your physical exam, your screening, talking with your veterinarian about appointments and, you know, just normal day-to-day health things. If you know that your, let's say your rabies vaccine or all your vaccines are due in July of this coming year, going ahead and getting on your schedule, you know, 2 or 3 months in advance is the way to do it. A lot of people that we're seeing now are calling 3 days before their vaccines are due. And we, like you said, we've been booked out 3-4 weeks in advance. We have a system built into our clinic, and I'm sure a lot of other practices have. We put in these appointments for sick visits and urgent care visits because of, you know, people, we're seeing more sick pets, more chronically ill pets that are now being seen on a more regular basis. And we've tried to fit those in because those are what's urgent. That's what needs to get seen sooner versus just getting, you know, your annual vaccine. But that comes at a cost of losing wellness appointment. So we can't always schedule just routine wellness because we've added in these sick appointments. And so we're encouraging a lot of our clients as well to just go ahead and, if you know that you're, you know, going to be coming up due in a couple of months, go ahead and schedule it. I recommend that for every pet owner. Take a look, call your vet, just ask for the records, like, hey, when am I due for this? And that way you can be ahead of it, not be as frustrated when you call your vet and you're due within a week and we can't get you in.
We're talking with Dr. Danielle Mizek, who's a vet at Janesville Animal Medical Center. We're discussing pet health, and she's explaining how animal clinics are operating in these times. Taking your questions as well about your pet and your pet's health, 800-642-1234. We heard from Lance in Port Edwards, called in, couldn't stay with us. Lance adopted a dog in these times after serving in the military. The dog came from a puppy mill, Lance says. And Lance said that the dog had one issue after the other, worms, ear infections. But Lance said that they did not have a delay in getting treatment and were really grateful for that. What would you say to Lance?
It's nice to hear those types of stories. I think veterinarians really go the extra mile, especially any time we can, to help these sick patients, especially new puppy visits. We know that timing of vaccines are critical, so we really try to do everything we can to get these types of patients in, especially ones that they just recently adopted, especially if it's their first dog or their first pet. We really try to work with people on getting all those, you know, settled out. And I really am grateful for people like Lance that call in and just want to say thank you. That means a lot to veterinarians practicing and our vet techs as well.
We've heard that socialization in the pandemic, very difficult for pet owners. How should people who have adopted these pandemic pets make sure their pet receives healthy socialization?
That is probably one of the most common questions we've been asked throughout this pandemic. You know, originally, for people that are wondering what that means, is when the pandemic happened, a lot of people and a lot of puppy classes at local pet stores and things like that kind of shut down. But then a lot of people adopted dogs and puppies and things like that. And so they weren't able to get in to have their puppies socialized, which means, you know, meeting new people, having new experiences, meeting other dogs. And I think one of the things that I've recommended to people is, yeah, we might not be able to get in these big group settings, but you can still go walk around stores that allow dogs and bring training treats and get them slowly introduced to new sights, new sounds, new ways, you know, of going up to people, just so they have a little bit, instead of just being in the house and being in your backyard and that's their entire life. It really is important to get some of these new puppies and these new dogs that you've adopted out and about, whether that be outside on a hike so you can see people at a social distance but still interact with them. They can still see them. Doing those types of things, even in a pandemic, relatively is quite difficult, but I think there's great benefit to getting them out, having multiple people meet your dog, especially within your own family unit, not just one person taking care of them. Every little bit helps, and the more you can get them, you know, walking around, socializing, that really will help get your dogs more social in the end.
What if your pet put on weight over the last, you know, put on pounds over the last couple of years? How concerned should you be about your dog or cat really maintaining a healthy weight?
Yep. If you talk to probably anyone in my practice, from vet techs to clients, even to other veterinarians, weight and healthy weight in dogs is one of my, I'd say specialties, but more of my pet peeve. So getting, what I would recommend is, if you haven't had an annual physical by your veterinarian, that's the first and foremost thing that I would recommend. That will at least get you a what's called a body condition score. And we use that as veterinarians to actually calculate the amount of calories, kind of like a BMI in humans, that that dog will need to either maintain or lose weight. Hmm. And having that body condition score is how I, as a veterinarian, kind of track their progress, because it's more than just how much fat is on them. It's also about their muscle score and other things. And each breed also is very different. Like a bulldog does not look like a German Shepherd. And so the body condition scores mean different things for different breeds. And so starting with that, the veterinarians can then, even if it's, you know, if you were just recently seen and you're still concerned about it, veterinarians are really good about calculating out the number of calories based on the food you have. Mm-hmm. And you can actually get them to tell you how much cups per day should my pet be getting, and get them on a nice weight loss diet if they need it.
How do you evaluate then whether your pet is getting enough exercise?
Yep. So that's very important. That's one of the things that we harp on here at Janesville Animal Medical Center, is trying to get to, you know, what's your daily routine, what's your exercise, what's your weight and your body conditions for. And so different, when I talk to people, I kind of gauge what their lifestyle is. You know, when I see a farm dog with a, you know, an Australian Shepherd running around who's what I consider a lower body condition, or, you know, in weight, they definitely need a certain amount of exercise just to maintain that. And so having that discussion, knowing what you're doing with your dog, all of that plays into what we recommend for sure.
We have veterinarian Danielle Mizek fielding questions about your pet. Are you a first-time pet owner? Have you recently stopped working from home? How did your dog or cat react? Join in, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Dr. Mizek here on the Ideas Network. We're in conversation with the veterinarian on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. About 6.3 million companion animals enter animal shelters nationwide each year, about half and half dogs and cats. That's from the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Have you adopted an older pet, the ones typically less desirable? How is your new pet doing in your family? Anything you want to ask the vet? 800-642-1234. Dr. Danielle Mizek with us for about 10 more minutes. Dr. Mizek, how are pets reacting as their owners return to the office after working from home?
It's kind of a mixed bag from what we've heard from owners coming into our clinic. Some of them have been unfazed. I'd say those are probably more along the golden retriever type of breeds, where we've got, you know, they've been kind of socially used to having people come and go and then leave. But a majority of the ones that we've seen, especially new pets that have been brought in during the pandemic, where the owners were working from home, a lot of them have experienced some level, it's, you know, varying degrees, of what we call separation anxiety. Quite a good amount of calls every week come into, my cat's really stressed, you know, my dog's really stressed, how do I help them? And that's definitely a conversation I would call your veterinarian about, because there's things that we can do to help prevent, you know, not necessarily stop completely, but at least lower the anxiety levels of you, especially as you're moving back into going back into the workforce and trying, you know, leaving your pets at home. There's medications, there's behavioral modifications. There's a lot of things and tips and tidbits that we can do as veterinarians to kind of help guide that process. And it all starts with that initial, you know, reaching out to your veterinarian, not just kind of enduring it, because usually those types of behaviors don't get better. They tend to generally get worse. So I highly recommend speaking with your veterinarian, especially early on, as you know you're going to be moving back into being less time at home and more time at work.
One thing that could be going on as well in that mix is crate training, that dog being in a crate during the day while the family is away. Do you have any tips on how to kennel train your dog?
Yep, absolutely. And generally speaking, it's sooner rather than later. And trying to make that kennel experience not one of punishment or bad, you know, where bad things happen. So if your puppy pees on the rug and you throw them in the crate, they start to associate, anytime I do something bad, I go into the crate. So I can't go in the crate or it's bad.
Oh.
And so we tend to recommend using that as a safe space for dogs, especially puppies, like feeding them in the crate, having that door in an easily accessible place where they can always walk in and out, putting toys in there anytime they go in there. But especially like as young puppies, starting them off, you know, in just short bouts of time. So don't just put your puppy in there and leave for 5 to 6 hours. You know, give them like an hour or two in there and then come back out. And every single time they go in the kennel, give them positive reinforcement. So whether that be a treat, some sort of toy filled with a little bit of peanut butter, anything to keep that as a positive association
mm-hmm.
in small amounts of time as you grow up. Because once you start, if you just automatically assume all dogs know how to crate train, that's when we start to get that anxiety levels rise in a lot of our dogs. So I recommend very small amounts of time frequently.
Let's bring on a caller. Mara Lee is joining us from Rice Lake. Hi, Mara Lee.
Hi. My question is, I have a 14-year-old dog and a 4-year-old dog, small breed. And the 14-year-old, I can see him declining quite quickly, and I think we're coming towards the end of his time. I'm thinking about the younger dog and feeling the loss of the older dog as a companion. And is it better to introduce another dog at this time or to wait until after the older dog passes?
Interesting. Yes, Dr. Mizek.
Hi, Marley. That's a absolutely wonderful question. I thank you for bringing that up. I probably get that question at least once a week, at least around that same similar type. One of the things that I always talk to pet owners about is what's right for your family. So we tend to look at dogs, and they are our family. They react very similar to grief when losing a member of their pack. But one of the things that I encourage people to not do is just go out and get another dog because they know one of them is declining. That generally tends to put a little bit more stress on you as well as the other pack members. Because if you think about, you know, if your dog is kind of losing a little bit of its way and it's getting older and it starts to see as a new pack member, that can be stressful. And then you spend a little bit more time with that new pack member versus, you know, trying to make sure that your older dog is comfortable. There can be benefits to getting one while you still have both dogs in there. But I tend to say what works best for you and your scheduling and your pack members, as well as, you know, what about that young dog? And is that going to be too much to have two younger ones, you know, rambunctiously playing with your older one too? Just things to think about. I don't think it's ever a bad idea. I don't always think it's a great one, but it's definitely something to kind of evaluate. How rambunctious is your current puppy? How much can your older one handle? And then go from there.
Really look at it holistically. Look at that mm-hmm. situation. Marley, thank you. Laura now in Madison. Hi, Laura. You have a question about cats. Decline cats?
I know that's like a really sore subject with people these days. I've had cats for well over 30 years, and I've had more than 15 cats in my lifetime. And I lost a couple during the pandemic, and the youngest one was only 4. She had been declawed. Then I got some new kittens, and when I went to the vet and asked to have them declawed, they said they don't do that anymore. And I know it's like a big fight all the time online, and I just, you know, I don't care about the furniture and everything, but I am mauled every day, so are my children, and it's just, I don't understand, because my cats have never had any ill effects, and I just wonder if that isn't part of this new cancel culture.
Laura, thank you so much. And I want the veterinarian to step in here and really address it. Go ahead, Dr. Mizek.
So you're absolutely right. It's a sore subject, and it is an opinion based on who you are as a veterinarian and how you practice. So I will speak only for myself. I cannot speak for other veterinarians. I know in Madison, they just passed that law recently. or I think it was an ordinance that stated that they were no longer going to be allowing to declaw cats. What my personal and professional opinion is, I've had declawed cats and I no longer declaw cats, mostly because of the fact that in some cats, and not every, so your experience might be completely different than another person's experience. When cats get that first digit taken off, they tend to react in a more biting type of behavior. So they no longer have their one source of defense. They tend to use their mouth, or they tend to have stressful issues because they can't defend themselves. And that can manifest in other things like urinary issues and, you know, things like that. But every veterinarian is going to have their, what I call their moral and ethical cutoff line. I personally do not believe in taking off a perfectly formed foot unless it's medically necessary with those toes. But if you ask another veterinarian, they'll be perfectly fine. And there's, you know, we talk to our clients about the pros and cons of both. If you ask any of ours, they have been given a long talking to. I don't try to make anybody feel bad one way or the other. Our practice still does declaw cats. But one of the things that we really try to go above and beyond is educating on what are the long-term possible effects, and then allowing the owner to make that medical decision. They use my knowledge, but it is ultimately up to their decision and then up to the veterinarian performing the procedure.
Well, Dr. Mizek, we only have a few seconds left, but if you have a pet you want to give a shout out to, or if you would like to share with us about what you love about animals, a few seconds.
Absolutely. I have to give a shout out to all my staff and clients at Janesville Animal Medical Center, small and large animal. I really appreciate Wisconsin Public Radio for having me on today. And I thank you guys, all the veterinarians who are listening to this program. You guys are absolutely incredible. And thank you, clients, for being so patient with us. And we will get through all this together.
Well, Dr. Mizek, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Danielle Mizek is a veterinarian in Milton. Just ahead, what is your thermostat set at this winter? Is your furnace working properly? We talk with the heating and cooling service manager about best practices in home heating as part of our Ask a Contractor series. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.